Like the internet, the first cities represented both work and leisure opportunities bundled together in the same physical locale. Today, a phone or a laptop easily tacks back and forth between social media and family shenanigans to serious-looking messages from the boss. The internet gives us the autonomy of choice of interaction. You can be connected to a vast array of friends and families and strangers, but you can be happily absorbed in a game that you play on your own. And there is plenty that is available that you can filter out, just as you navigate the physical streets of your city by paying attention to only some of the interactions and possibilities going on all around you. You navigate the internet by directing yourself along a pathway of websites according to your needs of the moment. You know that when the time comes for some new query or experience, you can elicit it from the collective mass of data that resides online for need from birth to death. Homework hints, bridal salons, fertility advice, parenting tips, financial and legal counsel, dog walking services, hearing aids, medical care, mortuary services. For our ancient ancestors, cities were the first internet, a way to communicate and interact with an enormous range and diversity of people, to engage in new forms of work and leisure, and to constantly be in contact with others. Just as the internet provides us with the opportunity to engage in a fundamental human need for communication and display, the city form provided something so compelling that once it was invented, people couldn't imagine life without it. But as in the case of the internet, the concept of cities had many necessary pre-existing components. The human capacity for language. Our ancestral history of migration, the human species' uniquely intensive dependence on objects, and our collective drive to envision and build diverse types of architecture. As we'll explore in this book, each of those components was essential for the development of urban life and for its continuity in the modern world. That's from the opening chapter of Cities, the First 6,000 Years, by Monica L. Smith, and I gotta tell you, I really like the subtitle of the book, The First 6,000 Years, for that title hints at the broad and expansive take of this book. Technology, sociology, history, literature, the arts. To talk about cities is to talk about all of this and more. Our very readable story starts with garbage, didn't read that part, and the internet. Ancient and modern-day garbage, you see, is a jewel in the eye of the archaeologist, we're told. The stuff we humans throw away is a valuable treasure trove of what everyday folks used in their lives. Available as a guide to human settlements, centuries or even millennia after the humans who threw away the stuff have passed away. And the internet, as a modern-day analog for the development of cities from long, long ago, into today, as we just heard. Such is the marvelous writing we encounter in Cities, the First 6,000 Years, from those seemingly disparate, if oddly twin human creations of garbage and the internet. Our author goes on to establish the groundbreaking impact cities have had on human behavior. As we humans found ourselves moving from self-contained village life, where everyone and every day was much like every other day and every other person, as we moved into larger urban life, we found ourselves surrounded by an ongoing, surprising, and exciting place where every day was not the same and every person was not the same. We continue with chapter after chapter spiced with surprising ideas, twists, and turns in this very human story of our past, our present, and at least our foreseeable future. We come to a new definition for middle class. It's not only for the industrial and now knowledge revolution periods. Our author wraps us back to the ancient Mesopotamians who found themselves using those famous clay tablets to keep track of sheep and goats, of the famed Code of Hammurabi, on through ancient Egyptian and Greek and Roman city bureaucracies, and even into those small medieval urbs, often more than growing villages, all of which needed a flexible, often growing elite of scribes, of merchants, of priests, those who knew how to read and write, and who, because of their brain power, found themselves lording it over those who used their brawn to make their way in the world. How much has changed, and how much continues the same with social dynamics. The surprises of modern archaeological work and theorizing continue, as Monica Smith shares with us the growing popularity of stress and scarcity as important drivers of urban centers. Stress and scarcity, as opposed to urban centers coming to being in relatively easy places of natural wealth and clement weather. She suggests that increasingly, archaeologists and historians are referring to the fragile crescent instead of the fertile crescent when referring to that cradle of early civilization between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers in what is now called Iraq. Smith is relentlessly positive and upbeat when writing about cities throughout time, these most human of creations, writing about the herky-jerky development of the stuff that makes cities possible for us to live in, the infrastructure we always take for granted until it begins to collapse around us, our houses, our centers of worship, industry, commerce, roads and bridges, the means by which water is brought in for use, and the ways by which waste, human and otherwise, is taken out. The need for a constant supply of food and fuel to keep both the human residents and their enterprises going. As Monica Smith notes, urban settlements may and do have their obvious and not so obvious downsides. Cities, above all, are centers for human creativity and advancement. They are places where the residents, both those born there and those who move in after birth and youth, find they must learn to live with folks who are not like them, sparking a creative surge day in, day out, as the same old morphs into the now new, now today tension that Smith argues sparks our creative urge to develop the arts, to explore the sciences, and to evolve the varied and various political and social structures we now take for granted as part of the human experience. Thanks to trade, new goods come from both near and far. The dating and marriage pool expands far beyond the constraints of family and tribal gene and emotional pools. After all, second cousin Ricky may be a fun person to hang out with, but do you really want to have kids with them? Well, in a city, or at least something approaching a city, you might have someone other than cousin Ricky, second cousin Ricky, that is, to actually mate with and start a life and a family with. And of course, there is also the inevitable discussion of what comes next. Well, we've got 6,000 years of cities. What's going to come next? What about the collapse of cities? Looking at the question from the archaeologist's point of view, Smith argues that collapse is not as inevitable as we may think. Cities do grow. They change with the times, their environment, the people in them. But historically, very few cities simply end. As she writes, I'd like to suggest that the collapse part of ancient urban life is greatly overplayed. After all, many of the world's most successful ancient cities are still underfoot. Athens, Rome, London, Kyoto, Delhi, Baghdad, Cairo, Mexico City, Lyon, Carthage, Marseille, Quito, Xi'an, Jakarta, Istanbul, Samarkand, Cuzco, the list goes on. Wearing their ancient remains as a pedigree of urban legitimacy, they are right where their ancestors left them. I mentioned the book is readable. This is a text that is as approachable as that of any major magazine or newspaper or online blog, and interesting enough to keep our eyes glued to the pages as the story of cities rolls forward. As our friends at the Library Book Review magazine Booklist wrote about cities in their review, quote, Smith enthusiastically recounts her work and the findings of colleagues as they dig their bedrock, making surprising discoveries in each layer of debris. They are overturning past assumptions about the origins and development of cities. Readers can sense Smith's love of archaeology. Her chapter on archaeological methods is especially engaging, end quote. So the next time you find yourself wandering the streets of Chicago, the lanes of Delphi, or urban landscapes of downtown Lafayette and West Lafayette, spare a moment for the many, many thousands of years and the billions of people whose experience and lives have brought us to the contemporary urban experience. They may not have started out in Delphi, Indiana, or even in West Lafayette, but all those many, many years of urban development have come to play and made these towns, these cities, what they are today. Maybe give a thought to pausing long enough in your day to read a chapter or two of Cities, the First 6,000 Years. I think that experience may just enrich your life, too. Let's conclude with a few more words from our author, Monica L. Smith, as she writes this. For the first time in human history, and over again, the people who created the cities of these disparate civilizations in Mesopotamia, China, Egypt, Mexico, South America, the Indian subcontinent, they developed a physical infrastructure that linked residents together for the provision of water, transportation of goods and people, and the conformation of the landscape to drain sewage and take away trash. For the first time in human history, there was a production and consumption trajectory of goods that provided the largesse to enable a sophisticated social signaling of both belonging and aspiration for all sectors of society, from the poorest to the wealthiest urban dwellers. And for the first time in human history, people engaged in educational and entrepreneurial specialization to create a middle-class stratum that used written language to manage the construction, the upkeep, the expansion of the city's economic and political configurations. Urban spaces, she writes, channeled flow into crowded, dense spaces by drawing upon the long-ago practices of ritual that made crowded spaces an occasional event. What cities did for the first time was make those crowded spaces a regular daily occurrence in a permanent human-created landscape. From a primordial cognitive capacity for integration, migration, interaction, and material display, our ancestors created the ultimate template for human physical space and the ultimate network for human existence. Cities are here to stay, she writes, for good. Cities, the First 6,000 Years by Monica L. Smith. It's an enlightening and a fun-to-read look at those urban places we all love to at least visit and many of us love to live in. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, be they rural, suburban, or urban, including the West Lafayette Public Library.